Hello, everyone. Welcome back to For the Girls. We're here with an Aussie Grand Precap. We had the best time last night at Wicked Willie's in the West Village, which is starting to get into the F1 race watch scene in New York. It was really great to be there for one of the most exciting races of the past few seasons. We can't wait to discuss. Also, shout out and thank you to Bluestone Lane for giving us coffee to get through the weekend. We love the whole Australian Grand Prix weekend, and so having an Australian cafe coffee on top of it was perfect. We'll jump right into it. I'm Sarah.
I'm Chessa.
And I'm Tiggy. All right. Overall thoughts and takeaways. This was such a fun and iconic race. I honestly forgot it was so late because of how exciting it was. And just watching with some of you in New York City is always a blast. So thanks to everyone who came out. It just feels like this race and this crowd never disappoints. I mean, after last year and then this year again, really delivered. Also record numbers in terms of people showing up in person in Australia. Mm-hmm. So that was super cool, especially after the COVID years, I think, with Australia being canceled for many years. It just feels like it's come roaring back with like record people, record excitement and entertainment. So definitely top of the list for races I want to go to one of these seasons. But in terms of the weekend, I'm so, so happy for Sainz after what he best described as a roller coaster start to the year. I mean, with losing his seat, appendicitis, being on podium first race, it's been kind of a crazy up and down. So we'll definitely talk about that. I'm also really excited for McLaren. So happy for Lando to be on podium and Oscar to be P4 at his home race. Wish he could have been up there as well. But we'll of course talk about Max, which was crazy. Our reaction was insane.
Oh my God. Everybody talk about just energy to sustain the evening. My God, I almost threw up.
I know, literally. Mercedes woes. We'll talk obviously about the Williams situation with Albon taking over Logan's car, but super happy we got a great race. So thank you, Australia.
Thank you, Aussie. It was so incredible. And I think for me, the biggest takeaway from the race, which is like obviously something that you can always take away and think about every single race weekend, but to me, it was like such a great race looking at every single team and the dynamic between the individual drivers. In the case of Ferrari and Mercedes, most top of mind is the number two driver superseding the number one driver in many cases. Obviously, in the Checo Max situation, that also happened, but that was because the car literally failed. I guess you could say the same thing for Mercedes too. But overall, just like the whole dynamic between the drivers, the Williams drama that happened before the race even started was huge. Yeah, it was a great race. I will say that I'm really sad for Bottas and that whole team, given the amazing lead up PR-wise that Bottas was having. He's having such a week leading up
for his home race.
I know it was rough, but I think Australia always delivers, and it continued to do so.
Totally agree. Just was so happy for Sainz. He's truly in the form of his career, and I think has shown time and time again that more than really almost anyone on the grid other than Max really delivers under pressure when he needs a huge performance. And his interviews were just so inspiring, talking about what Tiggy mentioned with the roller coaster, how he started off the season with getting dropped, then getting a podium, then getting appendicitis, not knowing when he would be back in the car, to winning a race. And as we all know, in the past 2 years, he's the only non-Red Bull driver to win a race, and both times has broken Max's 9-10 race winning streak. So really just incredible. And he's just top of the driver market next year now for sure. I really want him in a top seat, which we will get into what that should be for him. But he's making a very convincing case.
A convincing case indeed. Okay, running off of that, let's talk about our MVPs. To me, Sainz is like the obvious MVP. So I think my other big one would be, I think, Oscar. I really feel like if it hadn't been for a slightly off pit stop and him running off onto the grass, he could have gotten P3. So big, big, awesome race for Oscar in my mind.
Good point. Definitely Sainz for me. I think on top of just the fact that the win itself was an incredible performance, thinking about what he had to go through physically, like he still had a lot of bandages from surgery. They put foam on his stomach and kind of special bandages to help distribute some of the pressure from the harness that would be like on the injury site. And you could tell when he got out of the car, I was expecting him to do kind of the triumphant fist pump on the nose of the car that Max always does, but he was struggling to get out. Like, you could tell he was really, really worn out. So it makes it even more incredible that he was able to pull that off.
Totally. I cannot even imagine. Like, that's the biggest dream comeback for having a crazy surgery and then winning a race. Like, I can't even. It's
so vindicating.
It's insane. So definitely agree on science. And I was going to give it to McLaren as a whole, not just Oscar. I think both cars had such great pace, really good execution. There was a little bit of a team order moment where they told Oscar to let Lando pass, but that was very low drama. And like I said, I was bummed not to have Oscar up on podium because he could have been the first Australian to stand on podium at home, but it'll happen eventually. I don't know if I think Oscar had the pace to beat Lando and be up on podium, maybe with some different things happening. But yeah, I think Lando's pace was incredible, and both of them really deserved the spots that they got. So let's go McLaren.
Can I throw out an extra MVP that I completely forgot about for my new favorite midfield team, the Haas?
Yes, of course.
We'll talk about them. They crushed it.
True new midfield team. Okay.
Double LVPs. Points, baby.
Yeah. Tesla really willed that one into existence. I love it.
Yeah, you guys were like, hold your horses. Wait, what? What?
Tesla's also willed into existence the strong Ferrari P2 and constructors.
Guys, I mean, I have magic fingers.
We're going to come back to this like at race 12 of the season and be like, things did not start how they ended.
You know, that's like F1 for you. Everything speak too soon. Yeah. Okay, give me your LVPs, ladies.
I think for me, kind of the turn 6-7 complex, which potentially could have a couple adjustments made to it. That was where Albon had his really big shunt in practice, which had the ripple-on effect of Logan not being able to race this weekend, which was really unfortunate. That was also where Russell had his huge crash, which was kind of partially caused by Alonso's driving, but I think just it being at this complex and him ending in such a scary position on the track points to some potential issues in this area. And interestingly, Sainz in the cool down room watching the replays was saying, oh yeah, I do think it's really a bit too narrow through there with the way they've redone it. And Lando's making comments about kind of the amount of grass through there being super narrow. So I do hope this is an example of how I think circuits and F1 should be really flexible and seeing when there are repeat issues at certain corners, being flexible about changing them for the next year.
Yeah, definitely. Mine is, I guess, a step two or double click into that is just the FIA after George's crash, and crazy that he was in the middle of basically the racing line on that track on his side. And you could just, honestly, the radio message was haunting. It was like red flag. I'm in the middle of the track. Like, he sounded so panicked and scary. And the fact that they didn't throw a red flag immediately, and then it just ended up being kind of a virtual safety car situation. Luckily he was okay, but I just felt like that was probably poorly handled. And you very rarely hear drivers on the radio with that level of panic in their voices. And it was just really scary. Yeah.
You forget that these drivers are full well knowing, like, multiple, like, every single weekend risking their lives. And then so to hear that, like, it does dawn on you truly how like high performance, high stakes, high risk that can all be. So that's a good LVP, Tiggy.
It's also a really good example of how sometimes when we see the freak nature of some of these accidents and the cars and the safety responses needing to be prepared for that, like, again, in the cool down room, Charles saw, they were talking about George having a huge crash just since the positioning of the car was so dramatic, with one wheel fully underneath the car, it pitched up on its side in the middle of the racing line. And then Charles saw the replay of the actual contact with the wall and was like, oh, it must have been a different incident because the result looked so much more dramatic than the initial impact look, which is similar to like what happened to Joe in Silverstone, or just examples of how you can end up with these extremely dangerous car positions from kind of actual impacts that aren't necessarily routine, but you wouldn't necessarily expect to end up in that situation. And this is exactly where we've seen these F2 fatalities, where it's so dangerous when it's not the initial impact, it's the car getting thrown back out into the racing line and getting hit by other cars at full speed. And so I totally agree. I think there should be kind of a system where that's an immediate red flag if there's a disabled car stuck in the racing line.
For sure.
Totally.
For sure. My LVP, on a bit of a lighter note, was just the pit stop crew at steak. So bad.
It's so brutal. Multiple weekends in a row and both drivers. Like
both cars.
Like yeah. Over 40 seconds.
It's crazy. Like,
yeah. I guess maybe it could be an issue with the car too. Cause it's like if the wheel nut's getting stuck that much, is it like a design flaw? It's so bad.
Get a new wheel nut. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Like after last weekend, having had that happen, like practice enough so this is not going to happen again.
Even like Red Bull does. Do it in the dark. I don't know what.
The zero gravity pit stop. I don't care what you have to do. Just like make it happen.
Red Bull's doing it in the dark with zero gravity.
Oy, oy, oy.
How about how our hot takes held up? Sarah, what did you have?
On this topic, complete disaster. Mine was Botas in the points, which...
Oh, no.
Way too hot. But as Chessa mentioned, special shout out to, I think, one of the most iconic commercials I've potentially ever seen. His
so good.
Uber car share commercial. That was Super Bowl level quality.
Oh, beyond. It was beyond. It was so good.
Unreal.
It was so good. Honestly.
Song soldiers, aeration technology.
The entire steak lead up, social media lead up to this was incredible. I feel like not just the ad, but also the surfing videos. They had Joe in a mullet with a mustache, and they even had Botas on Joe's helmet. Like it was honestly iconic all around for the team. So even if the pit stops weren't great.
Yeah. Okay, mine was absolutely tragic. I had Danny top 5, which I know was like,
yo,
hot, but Danny top 10 maybe. But yeah, I mean, this was just a womp womp situation. I have nothing to say.
You said top 5? Oh my gosh.
Well, it's gotta stay hot.
That's why we call them hot takes. Yeah.
This is like a burning hot, flaming meteor hot take. Terrible.
As hot as Max's brakes on fire of a take. Yeah.
I had Oscar on podium, which was so close. I really wanted him to do a really good one. A shoey. I was joking yesterday or last night watching at Wicked Willie's. I was like, if Oscar gets on podium, I think this might be the first hot take I've had correct in like 3 years, literally since we started.
You were pretty jazzed.
And I jinxed it. So.
Okay, let's jump into the weekend itself. So FP1 practice, the McLaren and the Ferraris looked really fast. That ended up being pretty decently representative of the race, of course. The main event here was that Albon had a massive shunt in that turn 6-7 area that Sarah was talking about. Thankfully, he was okay, but the damage to the car was just no going back from that. It was unusable. So this is the first big topic of conversation for today's episode, the infamous Albon Sargeant car swap. So here's what happened. Teams usually bring a spare chassis to races in case of a large crash that sustains a lot of structural damage to the car. But for races like Australia, it's really expensive and logistically very complicated to do that. So they did not have a spare chassis there, which James Vowles called unacceptable in modern day F1. But logistics be darned, they did not have it. So they only had one usable car. So Williams made the decision to have Albon race Logan's car to maximize the opportunity to get points, thinking that no matter what, Albon would have outqualified or would have finished above Logan. Logan called it the hardest moment he can remember in his career. And Vowles, the team principal, said, while Logan should not have to suffer from a mistake that he did not make, the midfield is so tight that the team had to maximize for potential points. Ba-da-da-da. What do you guys think?
Okay, so conundrum for the week. What would you all have done? Was this the right decision? If you were in James Vowles' position, what would you have done?
It's so, so hard. I think when you think about this as a business and you think about maximizing the number of points, and another thing James Vowles said is the difference, even a 1 point could be the difference between 10th and 6th in constructors, which is millions of dollars on the line.
That's
so I think
true.
If you're thinking about it in those terms, yes, it is the right business decision. That said, it is so unfortunate and brutal for Logan to have to suffer for a mistake that he didn't make, to send this message to Logan early in his second season that the team doesn't really trust him to perform at the level or caliber of Albon. So I think on balance, I would have done what James Vowles did, but it's also really horrible that they found themselves in that position to begin with. Like, it's the third race of the season. You should have a spare chassis. I know it's Australia. I know it's far. But F1, this is like a logistical minefield that you have been, you know, in for many decades. Like, have a spare chassis at a race, especially at a track that's fast. And Albon crashed at the same corner last year. So, like, I just think it was a horrible thing for them to on their side for planning. So yes, I would have done what James Vowles did, but I think it's just, I do feel like it's unacceptable.
Okay. So to me, the sense, or I have two things to say about this. Tiggy, you're 100% correct on the business side. So as a team principal, you need to maximize points. My thought on this though is, how can you be so sure Albon's going to outqualify Logan? It's not like,
I mean, I guess you look at every single race in the past year in three races.
As I say that, but my point is, it's not like they're – oh, my actual point was, how can you be so sure you're going to be in the points at all, given your historical record?
Which they weren't, and they didn't finish in the points.
And that's my point. So it's like, it's different if you're making the case like, okay, you have – oh, you have Max and Checo, and one car literally isn't going to work this weekend. Obviously, you put Max in the car because has a consistent track record, and the team has a consistent track record of being in the point. So that to me is conundrum-y in and of itself. And then second is this, the whole narrative that James Vowles has been building around Logan's career is so, to me, refreshing, because it's all about like, we have this young rookie. He's, you know, he's doing great things. He's really talented. Like, we're not giving him ultimatums. We're not giving him, you know, like, you got to do X by X day. And it's been this whole narrative of like development and growing into the team. And this is just like stabbing that in the back. Like, the narrative is completely misaligned. So those are my two thoughts, but I think I still would have done it. If this is a true conundrum and you really have to decide.
Interesting. Okay. So getting into FP2, there was some big foreshadowing here with Verstappen getting out late due to work on his car and Lewis having an extremely difficult session, just kind of kicking off a really, really taxing weekend for him. The Aston Martins were up there in P4 and P5, so they were looking pretty good. For FP3, it was really tight between Red Bull and Ferrari. Overall, a tight timesheet heading into quali.
For quali, so Q1, for eliminations, we had Nico Hülkenberg, Gasly, Daniel Ricciardo, which was a bummer, and Joe, which was only four eliminations since Logan was not racing. This was really tough for Nico. He got impeded by Checo on a flying lap. The stewards then later gave Checo a three-place grid penalty for it, but it didn't help Nico get into Q2. It was also really brutal, obviously, for Danny Ricciardo with this big return to his home race. It's the first time he had raced here in a couple years, and he did put in a great lap, but it was deleted due to track limits issues. So just really unfortunate for him and for Hülkenberg all around.
For Q2, big upset here was Lewis. He was really struggling with the car all weekend. George has outqualified him at every race this season so far. And this weekend was Lewis's worst quali performance at the Australian GP in 14 years. He said that the car's inconsistency and unpredictability really messes with his mind. So overall, we had Hamilton out, Albon, Bottas, K-Mag, and Ocon.
For Q3, Sainz was looking fast. He got provisional pole before Verstappen snatched it. So it was already kind of a great comeback story, even with Sainz qualifying front row. So in the end, it was Verstappen, Sainz, and Checo top three, followed by Norris, Charles, who had to abandon his last flying lap, Piastri with a big P6 in front of his home crowd, Russell, Tsunoda, and both Aston Martins. And then Checo got a three-place grid penalty for impeding Hülkenberg in Q1. So then the front two rows for the start ended up being Max and Carlos, and then Lando and Charles.
How do you say trio? What's the quadruple of it? What a foursome.
Quad.
So
for overall highlights in the race, like we were saying before, Australia just looks like such an incredible atmosphere, record-breaking crowd of 452,000 spectators. And just the shots, the aerial shots of this track with the water and the palm trees, and it was beautiful weather, like it just looks amazing. The start of the race, it looked like a standard one with Max pulling ahead of Sainz, but then things quickly got much more interesting than usual. So Max was having issues with the rear brakes kind of as soon as the race started. And then once DRS was activated, Sainz had this big overtake of Max, started pulling ahead. And then on lap three, that's when there was a bunch of smoke coming from Max's rear wheel on the right. And then Max started yelling about a brake fire on the radio. And by the time he got into the pit lane, the brake had exploded and it was literally in flames as he was pulling into the pits with the mechanics needing to heavily extinguish the fire. And Max hopped out and his race was done on lap three. And by lap 10, he was already in a polo out in the pit lane on the pit wall with the team. So that was not what we were expecting, but it made for a little bit of a more exciting race than usual.
Yeah, you can say that again. It was amazing. Other things kind of that happened at the beginning of the race. So Sainz started quickly pulling out a multiple second lead over Lando and Charles. And then meanwhile, Hamilton was really struggling, had a big off through the grass at turn one, was just not going to be his race kind of from the get-go. Overall, on tire strategy, this was a two-stop race for everyone, but there were very tire choices throughout. I think with the heat and everything, people would have, you know, preferred to maybe be on hards the entire time, but it was a hard slash medium tire strategy throughout the race. So on lap 16, Sainz pitted to switch to hards. And then right after he pitted, kind of screwed him over a little bit, there was the virtual safety car that happened due to Hamilton's engine failure. I think the only person who really capitalized on that was Alonso. But thankfully, Sainz had built up enough of a lead to maintain and keep the lead ahead of Leclerc and Piastri.
On the last lap, disaster struck again for Mercedes with Russell trying to overtake Alonso, as we said, at kind of this turn six, turn seven area. Alonso braked too hard, and we'll get into this, but he had started braking before the actual braking point at the turn. George had a big crash. His car ended up on its side in the middle of the track, so the race finished under a virtual safety car. This ended in a 20-second penalty, which we will discuss, but overall, very scary. And our radio of the week was a very, very happy Sainz saying life is incredible sometimes on his cool down lap. It was amazing to see him so happy when it was just so well deserved. And he was totally justified in saying, which he did. He was so happy in one of his post-race interviews. And he said, all I want to kind of show is that when you give me a race winning car, I will win, which is pretty strong and at this point super justified statement. He's the only non-Red Bull winner in the past two seasons, so we are very very proud of him.
I also loved his radio about telling Charles to come closer so that they could celebrate together. It was really, really sweet.
I love that. We all need a little extra health boost sometimes, and Fleur Marché makes it easy for us to supercharge our wellness. Their botanical wellness patches have been such a fun addition to our routine. We just stick them on wherever we want. They have them for sleep, relaxation, focus, and other things. And the patch delivers ingredients to your body in a subtle but effective way, and the results last up to 12 hours. Fleur Marché also has botanical gummies and their new organic nutritional powder Green Machine. They only use the best ingredients and are tested for potency, contaminants, and heavy metals before and after production.
And one of our favorite things, we also love that the company is founded and inspired by women with the mission of helping us feel 100% every single day so that we can have full energy and crush it every day. Find your new wellness essentials at fleurmarché.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order site-wide with promo code FORTHEGIRLS at checkout. Orders over $50 also get free shipping. Go to Fleur Marché, FLEURMARCHE.com. Use code FORTHEGIRLS for 20% off your first order.
Okay, friends, it's festival and concert season, and you know it's all about the boots this year. That's why you need to make Tecovas your number one place for festival style this spring. And don't forget to shop their seasonal and limited edition offerings, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. We love Tecovas. They have a first wear comfort, which basically means there's no break-in period. It's the best thing ever. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's really no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it to a store, though, just visit tecovas.com, T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
So for teams, for Red Bull, this is a great example of how even when there's theoretically an unstoppable car and driver, stuff always happens. Granted, it was Max's first DNF since 2022, but that was also in Australia, which is crazy. He was definitely
Yeah, apparently
visibly...
there's an Australia Max curse at this point.
A la Charles and Monaco.
Yeah. He was definitely visibly upset at first, but then after, I think, was pretty nonchalant about it. He described the issue as, quote, basically driving with the handbrake on, which is crazy. And it unfortunately ended his attempt to equal his own record from last year of 10 consecutive wins. But I guess the clock starts over now. And then Checo, he had started P6 with his grid penalty, but was only able to recover to P5. His race also had some technical difficulties. He had Alonso's visor tear off stuck underneath the floor, which was causing some downforce loss. And then similarly, Ocon had to make an extra stop due to a brake problem when a visor tear off got stuck in a brake duct. So we've definitely had some of these visor tear off issues before. And for anyone who's listening who doesn't know what those are, it's on the driver helmets. You can tear off the like little piece of plastic and the drivers kind of just toss it out. But sometimes it can get stuck on people's cars in a place that it shouldn't. So what do you guys think about that? Do you think that's a rule that needs to be changed, or how do we prevent this going forward? Because it seems a little silly and dangerous.
There definitely needs to be a rule. It's crazy that this keeps happening. So the tear-offs are super important themselves because when there's dirt, debris, rain, or other visibility issues, it's a really smart solution where the drivers can easily peel off one plastic layer on top of their visor to get a nice, clean visibility surface underneath, which is very needed. But I don't understand why they can't stick it somewhere in the cockpit instead of it seeing everyone just tears it off and just lets it fly into the wind. And it's been super dramatic in the past couple of years because in – I think it was in 2022 when – towards the start of the season when Max and Charles were still pretty close, and one of Max's tear-offs got stuck in Charles's brake duct. And it can really ruin your race, like cause a brake fire or an extra stop. So I have not driven an F1 car, but I imagine there is some way maybe they could stick it inside the cockpit instead of just – throwing it into the wind to the car.
You need like a seat back pocket, like on an airplane. Yeah. I don't. To me, again, I don't know that much about like the science behind the tear offs, but this feels like a pretty low tech solution to just like peel and throw. So either like peel and keep, or can you like, can you adjust the helmet so that maybe they just like slide up each time and you don't have to like physically throw them off? I don't know. This definitely feels like there's many solutions to be had. Maybe they should make this like the next hackathon or something.
Little windshield wipers on the visors.
Yeah. Seriously, Sarah, you should sign up for this hackathon.
But imagine the radio messages being like, my windshield wipers are broken.
We forgot to fill the fluid. Oh, Lord. Okay, let's talk about Ferrari. I really want to dig in here. So obviously, without a doubt, Sainz had an incredible performance. I think once Max was out, he managed the race and his pace really well, secured a solid buffer for most of the race. Charles was faster on the last stint, but Sainz still won by 2.5 seconds. So we had a beautiful Ferrari 1-2. The Tifosi were rejoicing across the hills of Italy, no doubt. So Sainz's operation and surgery recovery, super fresh, like we said, the special bandages. It's just unbelievable that he was dealing with this whole medical situation. And I'm actually very, very impressed that his doctor was like, yeah, you go for it. Like, just get all that G-force all over the wounds and see what happens. But he was extremely tired at the end of the race. Everyone was so happy. And then, of course, Charles was very graceful following his P2, basically saying Sainz had the faster and better weekend, but and just emphasized being really happy for the team. So the question is, what does this mean for Sainz's future next season? Where do we think he goes? Where do you think he wants to go? I want to hear y'all's thoughts.
I think he's kind of the hottest ticket on the driver market right now. Obviously, things can change, but it really looks like he's in the form of his career, showing that he can beat Charles, who is widely regarded as a generational talent. So I personally really, really want him to end up in a top team as opposed to a midfield team. But thinking about what the options are, I think the main option is Mercedes, which obviously Mercedes has really been going through its struggles, but I am totally confident that eventually and hopefully for the 2026 regs, they can really turn it around. And I want to see him at Mercedes right now. That's kind of my take on it. I think he would have a chance to show up and really fight George for the number one driver spot. I don't think that would be a guarantee. Whereas if there was the potential for him to come in and replace Checo, which I do think Red Bull would seriously consider, it's just such a fundamentally different job, which we've discussed so many times. Like he's amazing, but he's never going to beat Max. Red Bull's never going to want him in a position where he could beat Max. So that feels almost more of like either a spot for a rookie who's really up and coming and can learn from Max, or like Checo, kind of an experienced hand who's more on the end of their tail end of their career. But Carlos is really in his prime, so I don't want to see him like relegated to number two at Red Bull. I would love to see him get to fight, and I think Mercedes is really the only option for that.
Do you guys see a world where Sainz tries to go to a midfield team to try to bring it up and have it be like Lewis going to Mercedes and then being there for 10 years and like that being the team?
I just don't know what team that would be, because I think
Alpine, the only obviously. Reason,
only if Andretti buys them, I guess. But the only way I could see him going to a midfield team is if he's really gunning for that Audi seat, you know, and that's he just wants to like have a stopover and then go to Audi. But I agree with Sarah. I think Mercedes is definitely the best seat option for him, and I could definitely see him doing that. And I think it would be super interesting to see him and George duke it out there, because it's not straightforward who would be the number one driver. And sure. I think they're both pretty talented, and yeah, it would be super interesting to see what Carlos could do there, especially heading into 2026, where hopefully Mercedes will have a little bit of a better handle on the regulations when that switches. But yeah, I hope Carlos goes to Mercedes. And I agree with the Red Bull comments that it's a great car. It's a great seat, but I don't think it's the right time in Carlos's career for it.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think it would be really hard unless Max was like on his way out the door. But I also don't see that happening in like a year or two, you know? So yeah. I think it's tough.
I guess another option, this is much more kind of far-fetched than Mercedes, but I guess if Lawrence Stroll decides to either A, fire Lance, which I don't think is going to happen, or B, sell the team. I think if Aston Martin came under new ownership, that could potentially be an option. But again, I don't know if that's going to happen before – that's not going to happen before August, I don't think. So maybe that's more of kind of a long-term solution. But I don't really think that's a solution for a seat for next year.
Could you imagine an Alonso-Carlos team, a Spaniard team at Aston Martin?
Oh, my
gosh. That would be insane.
Incredible.
I would love that.
How Sainz had, like, grown up with Alonso being his hero, too. That would be unreal.
Exactly. Wow. Okay. Let's move on to Mercedes. Speaking of potential future seats for Sainz. So absolute disaster of a weekend. Double DNF for them. Hamilton clearly very demoralized, had one of his worst weekends in recent memory in terms of car performance. And I think the big question that everybody's asking right now is, why does Lewis seem to struggle much more than George with the unpredictability of the car? Why has George outqualified him every race this season? Why are we even asking this question when there's like a 7-time world champion in the car next to someone who's, you know, much younger in their career? And I'm curious if you guys have theories on this, but I think it's a couple things. I think they are doing different things with setups for both of those cars. That has been confirmed. We know that George is a good qualifier, and we know that Lewis has typically in the past prioritized a race type setup versus a quali car. So I think that can explain some of it, but it definitely doesn't explain all of it. And I don't know. I hate to ever think that Lewis is not feeling like mentally ready to go, but I do wonder, with this being his last year, having already signed the Ferrari contract, it's like demoralizing to be fighting for P6 and above, you know? And I just wonder for Lewis, who is not used to necessarily fighting back there, if it's a little bit more demoralizing for him than it is for George, who has something to prove and, like, you know, is young and a gunner, and it's novel for him to be fighting up there. So I don't know. I wonder if that mentally is just part of it for Lewis as well, which I hate to even question, but
I think that's so fair. I mean, imagine sitting in the back of the pack and then seeing the Ferrari being like, that could be me, but it's not. I have to wait, you know, 12 more months.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you guys have thoughts?
I think that could be part of it. He the shock move to the Ferrari in the first case was an example of him just being so fed up and done with Mercedes, and just it's kind of a vote of no confidence in the team that's been his home for 10 years. And so I think if he's kind of already feeling like that, and then this is the third year in a row that he's been promised that the car will be better, and then it still is super unpredictable and difficult to drive. And it seems like to him, it seems fundamentally unpredictable in a way that's been his complaint all along. It's like things seem to change about the car. Sometimes space is better, sometimes it's not. But then you still end up in this situation where FP2 is a disaster. FP3, somehow the car looks pretty good. No one really knows why. Quali's a disaster. Car breaks in the race. Like, it's this crazy up and down that I think, yeah, mentally, when he's already made the decision to move on and is already, I'm sure, kind of looking towards his future at Ferrari, I think that's a really tough position to be in, of like showing up for the third year in a row dealing with this situation in Mercedes every weekend.
Yeah, and then add on the fact that the probably internal team dynamics aren't like all rosy for him, because everyone knows that he's leaving. It's got to be a little bit of everything, I think. It's kind of a big double whammy. Okay, let's talk about McLaren. Amazing race for the team. Tiki wore her McLaren t-shirt today to celebrate their P3 and P4 result and their huge points in the constructors. Both drivers honestly did look super quick, extremely well-executed race overall. And this is another really good example, and the commentators basically said this right off the bat as well, of Piastri being an incredibly mature team player. He just accepted team orders to let Lando through on that second stint, complied without complaints at his home race. I mean, he's an excellent teammate. I think any team would be extremely happy to have him, and he's doing so well at McLaren. And the team also did note that Australia, the track as a whole, really did suit the car. Lando said he thought that they had the same pace for P2, so I think they're feeling very positive and feeling really strong coming off this weekend.
It would be so easy for Oscar or anyone at their home race to be super salty about those team orders. And I just think it speaks so much to his character and just the long-term view he has of like, this is what's best for the team. My time will come. I'm in my second season.
Unbelievable.
Like, there's a lot ahead of me. And I just feel like that maturity it really speaks a lot to his character and where he's going. So I was super impressed.
And he's so young. Yeah, the maturity and the professionalism is just incredible. Thinking back to Alonso, Max, Lewis at the start of their career is kind of some of the more fiery temperaments and moments they would have. Vettel too. Just so many of these drivers. And it's incredible that Piastri's already able to behave like this at such a young age. Only a second season.
Yeah.
I forget that every time. It's unbelievable.
For Aston Martin, so Alonso finished P6, but then as we mentioned, he got a 20-second penalty for, quote, extraordinary driving. So basically brake testing, which it's debatable, I guess, if it's real brake testing or if it's – I don't know. We can debate that. But this was happening while he was defending against George, when George had that big crash at the end. Alonso said that he had battery deployment issues, so was struggling with that as he tried to defend. But George said he was thrown off in the moments before the crash from Alonso slowing down extremely fast and braking heavily before actually reaching the corner, which in a high-speed chase like that is really dangerous. But I guess the question with 20 seconds is that penalty fair? What do we think about the FIA giving him that after the fact?
Okay, I don't think that Alonso would be dumb enough to like literally brake check someone. That's like one of the biggest no-nos in the world of F1. Do I think he was being cheeky and seeing what he could get away with? Potentially. And so I don't know if 5, 10, 20, 30 seconds would have been the right thing, but I do know that a penalty was definitely in order. But the magnitude of it, I don't think he maybe 20 seconds was totally fair.
I kind of disagree. I think it was fair, even if he didn't intend to do it, because I think some of these penalties are intended to be deterrents or just reminders to everyone to stay on their best driving behavior. Like, same with impeding and quali. A lot of the times it's kind of the race engineer's fault or no one's fault, just the drivers genuinely didn't see someone. And in this case, Alonso kind of said he was really focused forward and was having his own car problems, was maybe a little overwhelmed at the time, wasn't totally paying attention on where George was in relation to him. But even if it's not intentional, I think it's still fair given that it did cause a really big incident.
Yeah, and the telemetry kind of shows how serious it actually was and how abnormal of a braking situation that was for him. So I agree. In the meantime, Lance got promoted to P6 after Alonso's penalty. So overall, a strong weekend for him after making Q3 as well. So it was good to see that. Overall, pretty decent weekend for Aston Martin, besides obviously the penalty. For Racing Bulls, or V-Carb, so Yuki got P7. He also qualified P8, while Danny qualified P18, and then Danny finished P12 at his home race after getting eliminated, as we said, in Q1. But what do we think about this? I mean, Yuki seems to be stepping it up. What does this mean for Danny? Is this just a bad weekend? I mean, we've seen Yuki start to outperform Danny pretty frequently. What do we think this means?
Sarah, remember how I turned to you last night and I was like, there's no way Danny's going to be in Formula One next year.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, I hope that's too soon to tell, but
that's a spicy take.
I would say at this point, it's looking like I am resoundingly wrong on this one. And this is a big win in the TV category. Remember last year we were talking about it and I was like, Danny's going to come back and be getting P4 in an AlphaTauri and get the Red Bull seat. Checo's going to get fired. He was like, not so fast. We'll see what happens.
I love Danny. I think I've just always been a little bit more skeptical on his talent of late. Once you see this happening at more than one team, and this has now happened at multiple teams, like with Danny, at some point it's not the car and it's not the team. I think it's the driver. And so I'm all for giving Danny a chance, but I feel like you really need to prove something if you're going to at least be trying to gun for like a top seat at a top team, you know?
When you have people like Carlos who are available on the driver market, putting in these incredible performances. And that's who you're being compared to. So I totally agree. I think in order to make himself a real candidate for next year, he needs to be convincingly beating Yuki. And that's maybe even just to stay at V-Carb. Like, I think if he's trying to move up the grid, he needs to start really putting that car where it almost like doesn't deserve to be almost. Think about what Max would be doing in that car. Like, I think he'd be getting P6, P8, whatever, every single race. So I think that type of performance of really outdriving the car is what he would need to be doing if he's trying to move up the grid next year.
Since we're heading into, like, the craziest silly season I think we're ever going to have, I think of Danny and his stock as of late as, like, an overhyped IPO. Where there actually is no underlying.
Wow.
Like, maybe
there's no profitability. The time to profitability is like 10 years from now when he will be retired.
I want to see the fundamentals. Like, I don't think that there he's not an undervalued like gem. Also, like, thinking in the world of our fantasy league, like, Danny was overhyped because he does have a lot of stock in raising the brand of the team, you know, exposure, you know, he won Drive to Survive, all these different things about him. But on the driver market, like, I think he might be like an overvalued commodity. Whereas, like, people think of him in the same breath as Signs, but you can't. Like, when push comes to shove and the driver market opens up and the summer's gonna happen in silly season, he won't be at a good team.
I also have to say, like, I've always been a little bit skeptical of that, like, one lap glory lap at the Red Bull test that, you know, Christian and whoever was like, that one lap would have put him next to Max. It's like he did great for one lap, you know. He also spun in that same test. I just feel like it felt a little rash to me, that decision, and it feels like that's been proven to be maybe the case, but I don't want to speak too soon. We'll still give
it's
them a
just
shot.
Hard. I see where Red Bull's coming from when they've tried to put so many different drivers next to Max, and Danny did kind of stand up the best. Like, they didn't want
that. Was
this
years
is now kind
ago.
Of ancient.
And
this, I know
it was years ago,
years
and
ago,
it was at the beginning of Max's career, and it's a very different situation, think, than is the reality of present day. So I don't disagree with that at all. I think Danny did great things at Red Bull, but I just think it's such a fundamental different reality from where we're at that it's almost hard to even compare.
We're also like giving the hottest takes, like absolutes. I am. And I'm like not even 5 races into the season. Ignore everything I just
said. Haas is a midfield team. Ferrari's number 2 in constructors. Let's just fast forward to December.
Danny drop next year.
Okay. Let's round out the rest of the team. So Stake/Sauber. They had P14 and P15 finishes with only Ocon finishing behind because he had to make that extra pit stop. Joe started last after part firm changes required for him to start from the pit lane. And overall, just a very cursed race. extremely slow pit stop, like we said, with a stuck wheel nut. And then Joe had a really slow pit stop. So I think unless the pit stops start getting better, we can consider them like P14, 15 and below for the next few races. Alpine, P13 for Gasly and P16 for Ocon. So that's the last place considering how many cars we had out. And Ocon had to make an extra pit stop due to that tear-off issue that we talked about. Overall for the team, not a big step forwards, but the car looked slightly more convincing this weekend than it has so far in this season. I think I said this last episode, but there's only up for Alpine. Like, so I think this race was a slight step forward for them.
Gasly also got a 5-second penalty, so that was a bummer for him. Mm-hmm. But for Haas, slightly better news. It was the first double points finish they've had since July 2022 with P9 Yay! And P10. So very exciting. There were some team orders here. So Hülkenberg was let through ahead of K-Mag, but they kept things, you know, pretty calm. They handled it well. It felt like a really solid team performance and the type of Sunday performance that they've been waiting for. You know, they've looked good in quali sometimes where they can pull out one lap, but to see them keep up with race pace at least a couple weekends in a row, I think has been great. So second points finish for Hülkenberg after P10 in Saudi. And then to wrap up with Williams, it was P11 and no points for Albon, even after the dramatic car replacement for him to try and get points. So he was only one off, but it just is not a good look for Williams. And I just felt so, so bad for Logan. So yeah, hopefully onwards and upwards for Japan and China.
Getting into a standing recap for Drivers' Championship. Pretty tight at the top right now, at least for now. We have Max with 51, Charles with 47, Checo with 46, and Carlos with 40. So even assuming Max is going to run away with P1. Yeah, it looks like we could maybe really have a fight for P2 and P3. That would be super exciting if a Ferrari driver could get P2. And then Piastri in P5 with 28 points. For constructors, also tight right now, and Chessa looking correct about Ferrari. Chessa has a huge smile on her face right now. We have Red Bull with 97, Ferrari with 93, only 4 points behind, McLaren with 55, and then a big drop off to Mercedes with 26, Aston Martin with 25, and then another big drop off, V-Carb with 6, Haas with 4, and then no points yet for Williams, Sauber, and Alpine.
To wrap up here with some F1 news that happened over the week and over the weekend, F1 Academy boss Susie Wolf has filed a criminal complaint against the FIA over their investigation into her and her husband Toto last year. Basically, the whole thing was just not handled correctly or well, and obviously they're retaliating against that. The big thing I want to call out here is this tweet from Sky News, which literally grinded our gears, and shout out to our friends at Fan Behavior Podcast because they did a whole video about it. But the Sky News tweet said, wife of F1 team boss. Like, we all know Susie Wolf is. Like, she's not Toto's husband, you know?
Yeah. Also, use her name. Like, she's a human and she's a professional woman who literally is the head of F1 Academy. Like, it's just, Sky should know way better than that. I do want to just say I'm really happy that Susie is doing this. I think it was easy to kind of honestly forget about this whole thing with everything that's happened at Red Bull, with all the news. You know, we'll talk about Ben Salem and just everything going on. I'm happy that they're actually pushing forward with this, and I think it's a really good precedent for Susie to set, and it's unfortunate that she has to be the one to do so, but I'm happy that it's happening. Another exciting piece of news, Pierre Gasly has dipped his toe into the world of football, or soccer if you're American, by acquiring a stake in FC Versailles, which is a French football club. So continuing the trend of F1 drivers purchasing stakes in professional sports teams. We've got a lot of NFL, we've got some soccer, so lots more to come, I'm sure.
Zak Brown has signed a new contract that renews his role as CEO of McLaren Racing through 2030. Really exciting and feels very fitting right now, given the team's performance and how crucial Zach has been in bringing McLaren up towards the top of the grid again. And the FIA cleared the president, Mohammed Ben Salem, over race interference claims that arose several weeks ago. There was an investigation into that. One thing to note is that Lewis was asked directly if he had confidence in Ben Salem, and he responded saying, "I never did," which...
Oof. Guys, the FIA is like the wild, wild west. There are too many like governing bodies happening right now. And I think the FIA needs to tighten it up a little bit. Okay. Yeah. With that, thank you all for listening to our Australian Grand Prix recap. And it was so fun. And we'll see you guys soon.